Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen. With me today is the woman who knows how to set personal boundaries, Alex Standy.
This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today.
Now, we are very hopeful that Dan is going to be able to join us. We haven't heard from him one way or another, but we all know that's kind of par for the course because he has so many things going on in his life. But if and when he's able to drop in, we will definitely include him in the conversation, not the least of which because I've got some stuff to bring up with him, which I'll get into in a little while. I have some initial announcements I need to put out there. First of all, we've been getting a nice surge of new listeners lately. So if you are one of the new listeners, let me tell you, Alex, I mean, it takes a while. I mean, because you always calculate listeners based on how many listen to an episode over the course of a month or over 2 months. And the surge has been happening for a two-week period. So I can't say it's all played out yet. But based on the numbers I'm seeing right now, we're getting like double to triple the listenership we were getting before.
Wow.
And it's been holding consistently for 13, 14 days so far. So by like around April 1st, we should know what has been happening now.
Well, yay us.
Yeah, so that's pretty exciting. So if you're among those who are the new listeners, we welcome you to the program. We're glad to have you involved and listening in. And I think you made a good choice because we do make it our purpose every single show to give you your daily dose of happy. So if you're looking for that little lift every single time, we'll give it to you every single day. Just keep tuning in. Here comes our friend Daniel. We'll bring him onto the program there. And second thing I wanted to talk about is because of the increase in listenership, I want to let people know who may not know about what's available. We have a group that has been around for a while, but I hadn't really been doing anything with it. In the last month or so, I've been doing some promotion to get more and more of our listeners involved and other people involved who weren't aware of it. It's now officially LOA Today group, also co-titled Living in Abundance, because of course that's our alternative term for LOA. And we've gotten a big surge lately. And Dan, hey there, Dan, good to see you. Dan is actually a big reason why that's happening, because he very generously let me use his book, The Money Game, to promote, to get people into the group. And it's working, Dan. In the last 2 weeks, we've got like 170, 180 new members in, and all because they were interested in reading your book. So first of all, thank you. And second of all, congratulations.
That's another 170 people who I get to do my dastardly plan of increasing the abundance of.
Look out, folks. He means it. But actually, no, seriously, I do want you, because we're getting them from a wide range of people. I mean, we're getting people from the usual audiences, you know, US, UK, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, all that kind of thing. But we're also getting a lot of people third world too. And we're getting a lot of people who are very, very, very new, not just to Money Game, but to the whole LOA concept, you know, to everything that's involved here. So I was wondering if you could just, I'm going to actually put you front and center so that I can have you big on screen here. So give me a moment while I switch it around. Could you just give us like a couple minutes talking particularly to the new members of that group and to new listeners here on the program about what the Money Game is all about? And just kind of give them I'm looking for like an overall sort of a philosophical thing, like what's behind it? What's making it work? And then, you know, maybe touch a little bit on what the main touch points of the whole book are.
If I tell the origin story super duper quick, that'll probably answer those questions and help people understand what it was. And I won't take up the whole show with it, or will I? So, 13th of February, 2018, I finally answered the call to do the work that I'm doing now, walk away from my business, pack up everything, decide I'm going to go around the world with whatever money I've got left and sharing my work. Literally, it's so hilarious. Back then, I was like begging people, come to the free workshops. Seriously, you've got to have snacks. Please come. And then last week, I was in Oprah's magazine. It's just wild to see like the journey, right? Right.
I didn't know you were in Oprah's magazine.
That's I was cool. In Oprah Daily. I'll send you the link. It was a bit wild. Because I got interviewed about 6 weeks ago. They told us it was going to be in a particular story that was going out that week, and then completely ignored 7 follow-ups, and we couldn't find it. So I thought, like, Blaine, my publicist, was like, I really thought we had that one. And I was like, yeah. She was like, oh, my God, Oprah's going to love this. Da-da-da-da-da-da. This is amazing. Da-da-da-da. I was like, okay, looks like I just got smoke blown somewhere. And then Yeah, then like a few days ago, we just got the link that, oh yeah, actually no, Oprah actually ended up using your content for her special feature thing that she does. I'm like, okay.
Wow. So, that's bananas.
Yeah. So be careful when you think that things aren't working out, because actually it was being conspired in my favor behind the scenes in a way that I couldn't even. Right. I'd written it off. I was like, at least they were interested. You know, I've got that one. Like I took the win. That was the advantage. But it's like, no, Oprah wanted to use it. And that's why it didn't get it used. So anyway, long story short story long. I'm dotting around. When I closed up the doors of my business, I had a couple hundred grand in the bank, which quickly disappear when you're not making any money and you're just flying around renting halls, paying for snacks, living, right? It was dwindling. And I was like, hang on a minute. This isn't going to work. This is not a sustainable model. This is not sustainable. Because at the time, I wasn't interested in selling anything. Workshops were by donation only. Like, I was really, really, I was about that life, right? And then I was like, hang on a minute. If I'm saying this blow funnel stuff is real, then I should be able to apply it to manifesting money. Like, if it's really real and I'm in integrity of what I'm saying, then there should be a way to make this work. So I did the experiment. I said, okay. I did the first iterations of the money game. I went for $50. I said, I believe, and it's very, very key that you start with something that's within your realm of belief. This is one of the things we speak about in the book, because you need to build the momentum. I said, $50. I believe in that. The next day, €193 showed up out of nowhere. So I said, okay. And I just kept playing. I spent the next few months doing it. Like I was in Toronto. I was like, okay, I need to pay for this place. I was moving from to an Airbnb. It's like, let's play the game, right? It's going to be like $600 for the next week. Let's play the game. Next day. In fact, no, 3 hours later, my sister calls me. She's like, oh, like, I'm so proud of you, what you're doing. I want to send you some money. And she sent me like £800, like out of the blue. That's my half sister. I don't speak to her all the time, but she just randomly out of the blue was like, yeah, I want to send you some money. We're like, okay, cool. This works. And I got it all the way up to being able to pull off asking for $10,000 and it's showing up 3 days later. So I said, okay, this is real. So I sat down and I formulated it a little bit and started to add some more structure, and I kept playing it. And then January of 2019, I held a mastermind in New York. By then I realized I was not going to be able to do things for free forever. So by then people were paying for stuff. I set up the coaching business. I got it to six figures in 4 months using these same principles, with a 500 person email list, without harassing people's inboxes, same way that I do things now. And I shared it with people for the first time, and people just started getting bananas results with it. We included it in my Micro to Millions program as a firm part of that. Again, getting feedback, getting results, fine tuning it until I got the basic version of it. Bless you. The basic version of it that go into a book. And then we put the book out as a very rudimentary basics, get it done. When people do our workshop or they come and hang out with us, we go a bit deeper in the application. But if you play with it, with the book, you'll start manifesting money, and you can apply it to different things as well. And we show you how to do that through the book also.
Really cool. So thank you. Appreciate the introduction for those who needed the introduction, and I'll be sharing that in the group. So anyone listening in the group, if you have questions about this, and undoubtedly there's going to be questions because there's a lot of real newbie beginners there, put them into that post chat, and I will pick them up and I will bring up with Dan the next time he's on the program, which is most Thursdays of the month. So it'll happen within a week or so. So very good. Thank you very much. Okay. Now we got that good stuff out of the way. We got more good stuff to come. Because Alex was kind of cueing me in before we got started here that she had this really, really, really cool story that happened. So, okay, you got the mic, Alex. What happened?
Okay, so cut to me like a month ago, all right? Kenny and I had lost our car. It had died, and then we had saved up enough money to buy another car. It wasn't the car I wanted, but whatever. So we bought it and then drove it for one, put it on the road, drove it for one day. Check engine light goes on. We take it to AutoZone. We're like, okay, what's wrong with it? They're like, oh, just a spark plug. Okay, no problem. So take it to our guy. Our guy says, spark plug got stuck in there. So now we have to take it to a different guy. Different guy says, it's really stuck in there and there's nothing you can do about it. And it'll cost you about the same amount you paid for the car to fix the car.
Oh, Lord.
So now Kenny's losing his mind because now his schedule and my mom's schedule are not working out because he got promoted. So now we're sharing one car in this whole household. So I said, you know what? I need help. I said it out loud. I just said, I need help. And it's weird because you know what's going on with the Facebook advertising.
Right.
So it's not even like I was looking for cars on Facebook. So I wasn't being targeted, but all of a sudden a Mitsubishi of Cape Boone Islands ad pops up right after I said, I need help. And I click on it and they're offering ridiculous money for a trade-ins, no matter what it is. I'm like, all right, I'll just talk numbers and see what they say, see if they can get something in my payment plan. Long story short, bought a new car with an amazing credit score that I had no idea about.
And another car that you traded that you couldn't even use, which is even better.
Oh, wait. And they gave us the money down for the car, but said it was so junk that we'd be better off junking it. And so that was an additional. So we got $400 for that car, and they scrapped it.
So you that didn't even know that you had a blinding credit file. You didn't even know you had a blinding credit record.
I've been working on my credit very slowly for like the last not even that long, like since August. And it went up like 40 points, but apparently it went up like 100 points because they told me, they're like, oh, this is your credit score. And I was like, what? And when you go on the app that I'm using to help my credit, it's like 50 points off. So I was like, oh my God, yes, yeah, let's buy this car.
Yeah, because so one of my business does the credit thing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so I was going to say, you got to be careful with what. Because some of them will tell you one score and actually like a different one.
Mm-hmm. I'm very iffy about that because Credit Karma tells you one thing, then this app tells you another
credit
thing.
Credit Karma is the worst. Credit Karma
is really
bad.
Right? Okay, good.
It's really awful. It's really awful.
Okay.
The best one, the one we use for our clients is smartcredit.com. And they are really good because that will give you like a path. I mean, we do extra magic and get people like 800 plus like a short period of time. But Smart Credit will give you like a roadmap to follow to get the thing done. They're really, really good. Yeah.
So not only do we get a manifestation story, but we get a little credit advice.
You're right.
Credit Karma is no good for the score. It's good to see like what's on there, but in terms of calculating your score, don't Credit Karma.
Well, yeah, I'll use it as a rough estimate.
Yeah, I wouldn't even use it as a rough estimate.
I know that now.
just use it for what's on your file and forget about the rest of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, from my experience, if you really, really want to know what the credit score is and you want some degree of accuracy, whatever credit card company you have, go through their website to your account, and almost all of them now give you a way to instantly get a quick read on what your credit score is. That's really going to be the best way because one of the three majors. Well, that would be a problem, yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough to check that way.
Yeah.
Wow. But very cool story. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, okay, we've got the preliminaries out of the way. So now's the opportunity to bring in our guest for the day. His name is Branch Isole. And I got to tell you guys in advance. Now, I was looking at the stuff that, because when we get guests, we're doing it through these various services, Podmatch and others like that. And everybody writes up, you know, what they're about, what their interests are, what, you know, if they want to be a guest, what they're going to be talking about, if they're a host or if they have a podcast, what their podcast is all about. There are links to social media. There's all this stuff that you can look into. So I'm reading up on our guest today. And the first reaction that was going through my mind was, I don't know. I don't remember why I agreed to have him on the show. Now, that's a really strange thing to say, right? On the show, right? Literally, thoughts were going through my mind like, was I smoking something that day? You know, was I drunk? And as you guys know, I don't smoke and I don't drink, so I couldn't use that as an excuse.
That's why it was so funny.
So, you know, what is it? Well, was I over-caffeinated? Well, no, I don't drink coffee or tea. It can't be that. I honestly don't know. But there must have been a good reason because he's here and this guy's written 22 books. 22 books. But even there, I can tell you there are some themes that go on. First of all, he's a Christian and he's got some Christian themes going on there. Okay, so there's a theme. But then he's also got some of these books that are on prose poetry. Now, I haven't figured out what prose poetry is. to me, it's either poetry or it's prose. I mean, it's like, it's either yes or it's no. It's not both. But apparently, in his universe, prose poetry is a thing. So we're going to find out what prose poetry is. That's going to be something. And then some of these titles, like Barking Geckos. Okay. Well, that should be interesting. I have no idea what that means. Orgy of Words. Eclectic Electricity. I don't even know where to begin to introduce this guy. So I think before I make too much of a fool of myself, I'm just going to stop. And I'm going to say, Branch, welcome to the program. I don't know if you can even handle an introduction like that. But I'm sorry, it's the best I could do, guy. I'm lost at this point.
Well, let me put down my doobie and my drink and say it's great to be here with you all this afternoon.
He said doobie.
Oh, what year is it? Oh.
I'm old enough to remember when that's what they were.
That's true. Oh, my goodness. I apologize for not having a better introduction than that, but I mean, I had to be honest because I didn't know what, I honestly don't remember why it was that I thought you'd be great on the show. I'm not saying that you're not, you probably are. I just don't remember what it was. So can you clue me in?
I'm not sure either, Walt. I mean, hopefully by the end of today, we'll have a better idea of why you, decided to allow me to be here with you three today and why that was a good decision for all four of us.
We will know soon. So it will be revealed. Absolutely. So why don't you give us like a little, you know, 3-minute potted biography, so to speak. Give us an idea, because I'm trying to put together in my head how you get these different book titles, first of all.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, the different book titles, like Barking Geckos. If you've ever lived in Hawaii or been in an island environment for very long, you'll find out that geckos, a little lizard, makes a very unique sound. And they call it a bark. In Hawaii, it's known as a bark. So Barking Geckos is a description of an actual entity that communicates, that's all. Eclectic Electricity. A lot of what I write about is eclectic thoughts and situations. My books are not necessarily theme-based, so when somebody picks up one of those poetic prose books, they're going to encounter 52 different short stories about all kinds of different situations and protagonists and antagonists. And so there's a real eclectic blend. And that was done by design. I find that a lot of people identify with the stories. They're not autobiographical, but they are autobiographical in the sense that we all experience one or more of those stories as you read through. So there's an identity there for the reader. And I'm trying to present enough material that every reader will find something that he or she identifies with in terms of, you know, the character or the plot or the outcome. So just a variety of different, I don't know where the titles actually come from. As I'm writing the books, something will trigger something and I go, oh, that'd be an interesting title.
So it's almost stream of consciousness in a sense.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Mm-hmm. It's not by design, nor is it by accident, but yeah, it sort of is birthed in the process.
And how did you get to writing books like this? I mean, what got you on that path in the first place?
Wow. You know, had anyone ever told me I would be a writer, I would have poo-pooed that idea. And if they would have told me I'd have been a published author, I would have said, you know, we're both crazy. I was never a great student. You know, actually, the first book I read from cover to cover was when I was in the Army on guard duty with nothing else to do. And that's really where I started reading. I did the usual school things, you know, in high school and college, to supplement my having a good time. But the reading actually came in my adult, like say when I was in the Army, I had a lot of guard duty in the Army and I had a lot of time. So I started reading. I never thought about being a writer, and it was not something on my radar. My first 20 years, I grew up in a real average, you know, I grew up in the 50s and 60s. So what was average then is certainly not, you know, the norm today. But I grew up in a military family. I was able to travel and live in a variety of places around the world, exposed to a lot of different cultures and a lot of different people. And the next 20 years I spent in the corporate world, and the next 20 years I spent unemployed and unencumbered and homeless and living out of my truck and doing manual labor jobs. And then my course in life changed and I got on a spiritual path as opposed to the world's path. And we were living in Hawaii and I was called to write my first book. You know, the Lord said, you need to write this book. I'll tell you what to say. So I sat down and wrote the first book, and it's a nonfiction book for fallen away Christians and people who are searching and seeking, you know, a spiritual path. And then I was sitting out. We lived on the very western part of the island of Maui. I could see the big island of Hawaii across the ocean there, across the strait. And I thought, you know, how frightening it would be to be alone in the middle of the ocean, you know, bobbing with a life jacket, and the kinds of terror that would go through one's mind as you face that demise, you know, not knowing from one minute to the next what might happen to you. So out of that thought came my first short story, and from that one, they just sort of started coming. And 18 books later, that's what poetic prose is about. It's short stories, many of which use classic rhyme, because, you know, poetry is the very first literary form. It was the original storytelling. And that's how people learned and remembered. And it's evident today in our world, people say, well, I'm, you know, I don't like poetry or I don't read poetry. Well, you know, every commercial jingle that you hear is poetic. Virtually all of the lyrics from rock songs, especially in my era, are, you know, poetry in motion kind of thing. So poetry is part of our life and has been part of humankind and humanity since its essence and its beginning. So we're all familiar with it. We all learn to read as young children via rhyming cadence and those kind of things. So I find that though many people, you know, shy away from poetry, when they get into it, they find that the rhyming and the cadence and the collection of word rhythm really kind of sets the mood and sets the tone. And that helps the story, you know, it helps what I'm trying to express in the story, so that the theme or the underlying current of the lesson of the story is there. And it comes through in a real subconscious kind of a way as you're reading it. And that's the intent anyway. I don't know that it always works, but that's the intent.
Hey, you're the one who's inventing the genre. As far as I'm concerned, you can be whatever you want it to be, guy. I mean, it's up to you.
We're doing this on your terms, mate.
That's right. So, okay.
Well, because it's not autobiographical, it's not my story. It's our story. You know, the intent is to make that connection. So the reader gets this reflective identity kind of situation. Choice. It's like looking out and seeing, you know, there's a lot of emotions and psychological things that we don't like to deal with or we don't like to face. You know, we all have failures and we all have things we've done that we're embarrassed by, and we've all made mistakes and judgment and those kind of things. You know, there's things that we carry with us that sometimes haunt us. And we don't realize that this is endemic of our species, right? We all are trying to learn the same lessons in life. So we all make those same kind of mistakes and judgment and choice. And when you read about someone who has done it in a story, you realize, gee, I'm not the only one, you know, and they got through it, so can I kind of thing. And it's this self-identity, self-reflection that there's a light at the end of the tunnel and it's not the train. So that's kind of the intent. And I find that because it's, you know, I have several stories that are less than 140 characters because we live in an age of, you know, instant information and instant feedback. People, a lot of people shy away from, you know, something where they sit down and read 400 or 800 or 1,000 pages. They're looking for something they can quickly, you know, get into their life, make it part of who they are and not be buried by it. So most of my stuff is really short, one page, two page, three pages at the most. You know, it's like a 2 minute to read it. A lot of them, you read a second time and you find something else in the story. And, you know, that's by design also. I want them to dig deeper and deeper every time they read the story, but be able to read it in a very quick, you know, couple of minutes and then deal with the ideas and the issues and go from there. So it's quick, it's brief, it's concise. There's every one of them is a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And there's always sort of a theme or a lesson incorporated in it. But I've got a bunch of them, you know, that I used to post on Twitter that are 140 characters or less. And poetry or poetic prose is the only literary form you can do that with. So it's perfect, you know, for our technology and readers today.
How has it been received? Because, I mean, what you're describing certainly sounds very much what a lot of the gurus talk about today in terms of putting content out. Put the short content out, short videos, you know, comes to mind, but you're doing it in terms of prose or poetic prose. How has it been received? What kinds of reactions have you gotten from people?
Everything from I love it to, you know, calling me all kinds of names. Which is great. You know, I try and have enough variety that when people are reading it, they find a selection that they like and they go, oh man, that was great. You know, I'll read on more and see if I can find something else I like. In the same vein, I have people who find something that they are very offended by or dislike for whatever reason and want to read more so they can find another one that they can dislike and call.
Either way, you're winning.
For me, but that's the idea, is to get them through the entire book, to expose them to lots of different situations. You know, lots. I deal with racism. I deal with homosexuality. I deal with suicide. I deal with, you know, family abuse, spousal abuse, infidelity, all of the things that we experience in life. At some point in our lives, either firsthand or somebody in our family or, you know, a coworker is going through something. And we are all familiar with these scenarios, even if it's not part of our actual experience. We know what's going on. So to have a story that explains the action, but also allows the reader to have a reaction, I'm trying to sort of educate people that this is what life is, right? And we'll get through it, but it's a matter of how you choose to get through it. You know, you can read the headlines every day and the world is just a really crazy place, especially in our day and age. And we are trying to juggle and handle all kinds of emotions and situations and people and events. And, you know, we grow up to believe we can control all of these things, and we can't control any of it. The only thing we can control is how we respond to the people and the events that we encounter every day, and how we choose to spend our money. And that's the only two things that we actually have control over.
Well, now I know why I got you out of the program. Now it's all making total sense to me.
and even the spending money depends on the country you're in, because that doesn't always have as much control nowadays.
Sure.
Oh, you weren't planning on spending your money on these taxes? Well, they're going to happen anyway.
Well, you know, most of the world lives on virtually nothing. Money, most of the world today in 2022 still lives the way it lived 2,000 years ago, trying to survive from day to day, you know, without being killed or maimed or harmed. And, you know, the rest of the world is indulging itself in excess beyond excess. And, you know, we have a situation today where people are willingly turning a blind eye to the needs and necessity. Why do we have so much hate in this country and in this world? Because we all have grown up thinking it's all about me and I should have whatever I want today or tomorrow. And I can do whatever I want to get it, and it's okay. And we have an entire society and world that lives by that credo. That's why we have all of these crooks and thieves and politicians and corporations, you know, oppressing and suppressing people all over the world and raping the planet of its resources so they can have more of whatever it is they want. And it's no wonder that, you know, there's a revolt going on in every country of the world because of the inequity of the world. But the point is, that's the world we live in. So how do you function and how do you survive in that world? My theory is you get spiritually grounded and see the truth of our life. And then, you know, like you guys are doing, you have a service heart, and Dan, you know, tries to give back through his knowledge and his books and his training. He's trying to give back and help people do better, become better in their lives, help them see, you know, where they can improve. That's all we can do, but we have to be truthful, and we have to try and fill the needs that we see and turn our backs on the lies and the fabrications. We live in tough times, and it's only going to get tougher. But, you know, we can do it. Man has survived thousands of years, and we will continue to survive until we don't. But we live in a tough world today, tougher than ever before.
Okay, so this is a preamble. I'm going to kind of put you on the spot a little bit, because you were promising us how you'd written all these really short pieces and so forth. Can you pick one to read to us? Because we need to get a better handle on what it is that you write and you know, how all these poetic prose / stories hang together. So give us an example.
Sure. There's a monster living under my bed. That's what the one in the closet said. All right, are you ready for the next one?
Sure.
The next one is called the next one is called Wedlock. Says it all.
Jeez. When you said short, you meant short.
I don't think anyone will accuse you of being verbose.
This is true.
you certainly won't be getting one.
Both of those give you a little something to think about.
That's fun. That is fun. So where do your ideas come from? I shouldn't say it that way. Where, what are you doing and what are you engaging in? What are you thinking about and what are you focusing on that lead you to get your ideas? I mean, what's your creative process like?
Sure. Interestingly enough, you know, because of my background and being able to travel like I did in my formative years and be exposed to lots of different cultures and lots of different kinds of people, I've been blessed with, you know, everybody has a talent. Mine is that I'm very observant. So most of my ideas actually come from the things that I see and hear in my life. I'll go have a cup of coffee someplace and sit down. And, you know, if you sit absolutely still, you sort of blend into the background and most people won't notice that you're even there. And they will continue to carry on their conversation regardless of what you see or hear. So as I'm watching people and as I'm listening to conversations around the room, I'll focus on, you know, something that sort of catches my eye. And I'm a student of human behavior. So I know that people respond in very similar ways to very similar kinds of stories or situations. So as I listen and as I watch, something will trigger for me that allows me to, you know, quickly grasp an idea. And from that, there comes the story. So I only need to bring home, you know, snippets or the fundamental of what I've seen or hear, and then I can play with that and develop, you know, a story from that. So that's where it comes from. It's just watching and listening to the people and things in my world that are happening and extrapolating from there, you know, some fiction that I hope will intrigue the reader to go deeper and deeper and deeper.
That's interesting because literally yesterday I was watching a very, very old interview with late, great Lucille Ball, the great entertainer, the great comedian.
Fabulous.
And she was being asked about her creative process. She was being asked how she invented, you know, many of the physical comedy routines that she did, the stuff that she did on Isle of Lucy and the Lucy show later on and so forth. And she said, I am a great observer of humanity. I love observing everyone. I love observing drunks. I love observing people in their most difficult situations. And like you were saying, Brant, she was talking about how they're oblivious to her. She was just there watching them and soaking up every single detail she could about how they were thinking and how they were expressing themselves and what they were wearing and how they were moving. And then she would incorporate all that into characterizations that she would do on her shows. And I was thinking, wow, that's a fabulous process. So to hear you say you were just observing people and they weren't even knowing that you were there, I was saying, oh my God, it's like, that's, I love Lucy. That's exactly what her process was. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Interesting. You can learn a lot that way. Interestingly enough, Lucy and I both started our careers at 52 years old.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know she started at 52.
I Love Lucy started at 52. She had, you know, business for a while. Yeah. But her legacy started at 52.
That is wild. Very interesting. So where do you see your work going at this point? Because I get the feeling you're going to be doing this like for the rest of your life. Do you see a trend going on? Do you see stuff happening? What do you see?
Wow, what a great question. I still write, but my focus has changed the last few years. You know, the first half of my life, I walked the world's path and was embracing it with all I was and could be. And the choices and decisions I made then cost me everything that I had earned or you know, manifested. And in losing everything, I knew for me there had to be a different way. There had to be a different path. And that's when I, you know, changed my life and got onto a more spiritually focused path. And for the last 25 years, you know, I've been doing the writing and the authorship. In the last several years, since I moved from the East Coast to the central part of the country, my efforts and my focus has been on end times and last day prophecy. So now most of what I do is talking about what biblical prophecy is trying to share with us in this time, in our days. And so most of my writing now is with that in mind. I'm trying to help people to see and to understand and to be educated because prophecy is such a large part of scripture, and yet so many people know nothing about it to begin with. Even Christians know very little about it. And it's a difficult content to sort of get through because it expands so much of the Bible story. And, you know, you can pick up a little bit here and you pick up a little bit 500 years ago in the story. So it's kind of difficult to get through, but it's so important because if you know anything about biblical prophecy, you understand by watching what's happening in our world today, like the Russian invasion of Ukraine right now, these things have been foretold and have been prophesied and are both warnings and promises of what's coming in our future. So that's where my focus is right now. It's a little more academic in terms of the writing, but I'm trying to share what I've learned and what I now know with people who are interested in recognizing the correlation between events that are taking place right now in our world, in every facet of our world, political, economic, social, religious, all of these things are addressed in prophecy. And if you know prophetic scripture, then you identify what's happening as part of this process that's taking place. So, you know, the Christian world knows nothing about it. I'm sorry, the non-Christian world knows nothing about it. The Christian world knows a little bit about it, but not much. My point is, if you are a Christian and you believe God's word is true, then we should be listening to what God has to say about our day and age. So that's sort of where my focus and my writing has been in the last handful of years. I hope the great thing about the prose is the stories, whether you've read them or not, they're brand new for everybody who hasn't read them. So those will continue.
I'm sure they will. No doubt about that. I'll give you a little background on myself. I no longer count myself as a Christian. I left the Christian church when I was 14 deliberately because I've actually read the Bible cover to cover, and I found that the people in the church where I was involved, as a Presbyterian church, wanted nothing to do with 98% of what was in there. And I was like, wait a minute, you got a whole Bible here. If you're going to claim this is your book, you know. So long story short, I decided to leave it, and it was a happy decision. I'm fine with it. But I also have some knowledge of the whole thing, and I don't even want to get into a whole Christian discussion, but I do want to ask a question based on what you talked about. I don't want to go necessarily to what God teaches or what the Bible teaches or whatever, but I'm kind of curious to know what your view is of when is the end the end? And the example that I'll give to explain what I'm talking about is that there's like an old joke about the person who asked for directions to such and such a place of somebody else, and the person who gave him the directions said, well, you keep going down this road until you come to the last stop sign, take a right, and it'll be a third house on the left. And so the guy says, thank you very much. He starts driving along, and after about a half hour, he realizes he has no idea which stop sign is the last one. So what exactly is the end from your perspective? How do you know that you've actually reached the end?
The end of what? The end of my life will be, you know,
well, when I take end times breath. is the end I was thinking about, because you made reference to end times. So what is the end of in end times in your view?
Well, for the believer in Jesus as the Christ, as the Messiah, the end, as he has stated and promised, will never be. For the end of our world, it will be signified by the Battle of Armageddon and the defeat of Satan and the Antichrist and the false prophet. You know, our end could come at any time, but the point about prophecy is it gives us a roadmap. It doesn't give us a timetable, but it does give us events that we can witness in our life that will give us the next thing to anticipate. And then, you know, the end will come. The end of the earth, according to Scripture, comes with the second coming of Christ and the Battle of Armageddon. Now, following that, then comes, you know, the millennial reign of Christ for believers and those who have been saved. So they will live on. Those who are non-believers will have died, and we'll have we will all stand in judgment. So that will be the end for everyone who, you know, doesn't profess and believe in Christ Jesus. That's the Christian view. That's all I can share with you, because I don't know when the end is.
Do you have any idea of what it'll look like when you get there, I guess is what I'm asking you. I mean, from your view, what do you think the end is? How do you know that you're at the end?
Wow. Well, my end, you know, our end as people individually is when we take our last breath. What it will look like after that, I have no idea. I just have to trust that it will be a fulfillment of my spirit, that only that could fulfill at that level.
Okay. Well, that's a fair answer. I mean, it's a really unfair question, because I don't know what the end time looks like. I haven't the faintest clue. I'm not even sure that there is an end time, but, you know, I figured, well, if you're going to say end time, I'll ask what an end time looks like.
Yeah, sure. No, I appreciate it. It's a tough concept to get our heads around. And of course, you know, most people, we all are not anticipating death, but it's coming at some point. So, you know, these are esoteric kinds of concepts and questions that we can deal with or not. It doesn't, you know, it's not going to change us. It may change what we think and how we believe, but, you know, we have to cling to something, whatever that might be. And everyone, you know, has that in their inner being, that, you know, what comes after this? You know, the great question, why am I here and what comes next?
Mm-hmm. Well, that was going to be my next question. I mean, after you mentioned when it kind of ends when you die, and you weren't sure what happened after that, but I was going to pin you down on that. Like, what do you think happens? I mean, I'm not expecting you to give me the 100% certain answer, but take your best stab at it. What do you think happens after you die?
I believe that we are all a unit of spiritual energy, you know, created by God, force of the cosmos that is greater than everything else, the creator of the universe. As one of his creations, we are each an electrical unit of energy with a spiritual component to it. When we are born, that energy becomes part of our existence, mind, body, and soul. So there's four cornerstones to who we are: our mind, our body, our soul, and our spirit. Our spirit still has that connection with God, with something greater than ourselves. However, this world, being the world that it is separated from that, and therefore we are spiritually separated. We grow with the Spirit in us, and because it's from God, we innately know right from wrong, and our society is built on a foundation and a function of right and wrong, or reward and punishment. And we grow up, you know, in that parameter, in that boundary. So when we, you know, go against society or break the law, you know, we are choosing to do wrong in that context. When a person chooses to, you know, go outside of that realm and look at the spiritual realm and align itself with something greater, I believe that our spirit, you know, becomes spark to life. We now can see beyond right and wrong. When we are on that base level of right and wrong, there's something I want to do. I go, well, is it right or is it wrong? According to whom and according to why? You know, does it break the law or not? If I have a living spirit in me that is now reconnected with God through belief in Jesus Christ for me, then when I have a choice to do something, my choice is more than is it right or wrong. My choice is it moral or immoral? And is it ethical or unethical? You know, I'm going beyond the how and I have to grapple with the why. So having that as my guidepost or my signpost here forward, then every decision I make, which has a consequence, is that consequence, you know, strictly on a right or wrong level, or is it on a moral or ethical level? And if it's on a moral or ethical level, then I have to be responsible. I have to take responsibility for that choice, and I have to take responsibility for that consequence. This is how we grow, and this is how we, you know, grow out of that attitude that it's all about me. I can do whatever I want, and there's no consequence. So, you know, why not? When I die, I believe my spirit will be reunited and refined through the love of Jesus Christ to return to God, Father, Son, and Spirit. And my spirit will have eternal life in what we know as heaven. What does that look like? I have no idea. Wouldn't even venture to guess. But it will be unlike this world. And it, you know, it's described as a place of unconditional love and fulfillment. So that's my choice. Is, you know, I want to live in a place that unconditional love reigns over racism and sexism and hatred, all of those negative things that are so prevalent in our world today. And that's what I look forward to. As I say, I'm a believer, and, you know, you know, the problem I find with Christians today is so many of them are hypocrites. They claim to be Christians, but they don't want to live Christ-like. They don't want to love their neighbor as themselves. They don't want to love other ethnics and other colored people as themselves. And I'm talking about white, you know, evangelical Christians who claim to be one thing and aren't. That's the long and the short of it, and that's the truth. They don't act Christian. If they knew Christ's words and they knew his teaching, they would love God first and most, and they would treat their neighbors as themselves. That's how I try to live my life. And, you know, I have a real problem with our Christian world today. I've been kicked out of a couple of churches and left all the others. it's not about it. It's not about a church for me. It's about living your life, you know, or morally and ethically with an example. And for me, that Christ is my example. His words and his thoughts and his deeds give me a guiding light as to how I should respond to the people and the events in my life. And that's the way I choose to live. I refuse to be sucked into a world of fake news and lies and fabrications, whether it's from Trump or Biden or the corporations or the Pope. You know, a lie is a lie, and I'm not going there. You know, call me whatever you want. I'm fine with that. I know who I am, and I know what I believe, and, you know, that's how I choose to live my life.
Very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. I find that with every time that I do an interview, I'm always trying to understand the person better that I'm interviewing. And I always take a different approach. I mean, these guys can attest to this. It's always a different set of questions every single time. It usually starts off with a biography and then it just kind of goes off in different directions. So today, this is probably the first time in a long time I was asking about personal belief about afterlife and so forth. And I'm not even quite sure why I asked it, but boy, it was the right answer because I got some really interesting stuff there. So thank you for sharing that. Cause that's not something we easily do these days. I mean, for various reasons, we feel like we're going to be judged. We feel like that we're going to be criticized. Yeah. We feel like we're going to be this, that, or the other thing. And yet you were willing to just lay it out there. So thank you for that. That was really great.
I appreciate you asking. You know, that's the way of the world. The world wants to make us feel guilty and wants to beat us down and wants to control us and keep it in its grasp. It wants us to make us think that, you know, I need to be this way because I'm trying to impress somebody out there, or this is what I want people to think I am or what I'm like or who I am. You know, if you want to live with that facade, okay. The problem you'll see in your life and in every life is the truth will eventually come out. You can hide it. You know, Trump has hidden the truth for his whole life, and it's finally caught up with him. You know, he did not want to be president. He wanted to increase his brand and keep stealing. And the worst thing that he did was open his mouth and become president. And now it's coming back to haunt him. And he's just one example.
Oh, sure.
You know, you either live the truth or you don't. And if you don't, it's going to come out. You know, how many people cheat on their partners? How many people steal? How many people do immoral and unethical things thinking it's not going to come out? And 25 years later, there it is. You know, you can't hide from the truth. It will come out eventually. It's just a matter of, you know, how deep you've dug that hole and how many lies you think you can tell to make it the truth. Okay.
If well, that's thank what you very much for... Oh, sorry.
Go for it. No, no.
Thank you for sharing your truth today. I appreciate that. We appreciate the viewpoint and the texture behind it. And we appreciate the prose poetry that is your way of sharing it with the world. So thank you for sharing all of that with us. Before we go, I know that you've got the 22 books on Amazon and other booksellers. Do you have, for people who are interested in reaching out to you, is there a good way for them to reach out to you?
I appreciate it, Walt. Yes. Easiest way, just Google my name, Branch Like a Tree, Isole, Isole. That has links. I'm the only one. You don't have to go through 100 pages.
It's a kind of unusual name, yeah.
Yeah. All the links to everything, you know, my website, my YouTube channel, work that's free to read, all of my articles, everything. And just, you know, I invite you to take a couple of minutes and see if any of it touches your mind or your heart, and you'll know where to get more.
Sounds great. All right. Well, thank you very much, Branch. Thank you, Alex and Dan, as usual. This has been, I mean, Thursdays are always different. This one's even more different than usual. So this has been good. Thank you to our live streamers. Thank you to podcast listeners everywhere. And we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.